Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You've got Scott Aspenlighter and Jake Eaton in for Aaron Flint this morning. Flint is getting some much needed rest and relaxation, vacation with his family. So we're going to take a call. Old friend of Jake and I from days past, Commissioner Randy Brodell from up at Flathead County. Commissioner, do you hear us?
Scott and Jake, absolutely I do. Thanks for taking my call.
Awesome. Well, thanks for jumping in, Commissioner. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, the legislature, I think is what's on my mind.
Right.
You know, having 8 years in the House and now as a county commissioner for 6 years, I've got a different perspective on what the legislature does. I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. And Speaker-elect Lear also kind of alluded to what do you do with can you paint a broad brush on taxes and tax cuts across the state? But in addition to that, we also does this legislature need to get engaged in that as their primary focus, or should the legislature keep the focus on legislative budgets for the state? And I would tell you that they really need to focus on the latter and take a look at the state budget. Low hanging fruit for the legislature is to go in and reduce property taxes at the county level, but because they could do that because we're not there with a vote, and we can go there and testify, but we don't have that local control. We don't have that ability to reach out and make an impact on bills that are coming through like the legislators do. So what happens is you take, say, Prairie County, and which has a very limited population versus somebody, a county like Flathead County or Missoula County or Gallatin County, and you try to say, we're going to pass a bill that affects counties across the board. It's impossible to say we're going to do a good job for each county by doing that. And I just as an example, Missoula County has a budget of well over 200,000. Flathead County has a budget of about 122,000. And yet the population, we have a lot higher population of people living outside of the city in Flathead County versus people living outside of the city in Missoula County. So
sure.
The people in Missoula County said, we want more services. We want to pay more taxes. And recognizing that versus Flathead County, who says we want an austere leadership decision for our budget every time you make a decision, and so you see those differences. And for the legislature to have an easy task of
hey, Commissioner, can we carry you into the next segment? We're going to hit a break here.
This is
Montana Talks Radio. Man, I messed it up again, Jake.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Welcome back. You got Scott Aspenlighter and Jake Eaton sitting in for Flint on Montana Talks. Scott, I screw that up every time. I got it right 3 times in a row saying Montana Talks, and then I had to blow it on the last one and call it Montana Talks Radio.
couldn't get it right. In any case, we have Commissioner Rodell was gracious enough to hold talking about local property taxes and the legislature and the impact. And Commissioner Rodell has pretty unique perspective on this, having served 8 years in the legislature and now six as a county commissioner. And I appreciate his perspective here.
Yeah, Commissioner, one of the things I want to maybe get your perspective on is, you look around the state at how, property taxes have changed. And what do we do with these high tax jurisdictions, right? You guys have done a great job, managing the resources in Flathead County. And, to all of his efforts, Ryan Bussey tried to make property taxes a big issue in his race against Governor Gene Forte. And then it came out, of course, that, well, his property taxes actually went up $65 because he lives in Flathead County. But you have folks in Gallatin County and Missoula County, who saw these, huge, gigantic thousands and thousands of dollar, increases, to the tune of 30-40% in these high tax jurisdictions. So at what point, is it appropriate for the legislature, the state to step in and say, hey, we're not going to let you do this to people?
Yeah, I think that's the $64 question. Because our taxes have been held low for the past 5 years. My taxes have gone up, less than $5, I think, over the last 4 years. My county taxes. We have to say, is that the responsibility of the county commissioners, or is it the responsibility of a collective group of legislators to make that decision for each county? And I think that's the question. I personally would not want to pay taxes in Missoula County. But I would say that the people in Missoula County have the right to vote out their county commissioners, and that's where I believe it really belongs.
Yeah, and I think that's the $64 question. That's the big question for all of us. I mean, as a city councilman here in Billings, we've got a very similar situation and are kind of sitting in that limbo as well, not knowing what property tax discussions are going to mean for our budget. Our budget's a little bit different in the charter for Billings caps our mills. So we have a mill cap. We're the only community in Montana outside of Shelby, I think, is the only other community whose charter capped the number of mills that could be assessed. And so when you talk about property tax reduction, not having a seat at the table for that discussion is a little bit challenging, and I would be on the same page as you in saying, hey, legislators, you guys focus on what's going on at the state level with state budgets and state government, and let us get the government that we elect locally. And that puts the impetus on conservatives. Right. That puts the impetus on conservatives to pay more attention to these local elections, right, for county commissions, school boards, and city councils. We do not, as conservatives, right, do that well.
Yeah, I think when you look at eastern Montana versus western Montana versus let's just talk about Billings. You guys are a charter city. We're not. We're one of the 52 out of 56 counties that are general government. So we are subservient to the legislature in the things that we do and the money that we spend. And when the counties get hamstrung, we already have county commissioners in eastern Montana that are driving snowplows on snowy days because the budgets are so strapped. And there's going into the weeds, there's a MCA 1510-420 that limits how much government can grow their budget in the county. And when you have a county that doesn't have new construction growth, that hamstrings the ability of local governments, county governments, to meet the basic needs of a community. And those basic needs are of course, public safety and our road infrastructure.
Right.
And so the legislature, they take that responsibility, and I was there. I took that responsibility to tell counties they need to cut their budget. But reality is that belongs with the people to make
Yeah. Well, Commissioner, I really appreciate you taking the time and sticking around through the break to talk about this, because I think it is important perspective to have as the legislature comes, and you do a very good job of describing the difference in the importance here. We're going to have a lot more of these conversations, and I'm certain that you're going to have a lot more to say as the legislature gets into session here in Helena.
Yeah, I'll probably be down there off and on, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, well, Scott and Jake, thank you very much.
Yeah, I appreciate you jumping on, Commissioner. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, we'll see you. Bye.
All right. Well, that was Commissioner Brodell. Jake, what are your thoughts here?
Well, I think Commissioner Brodell's got, like I said, a unique perspective, because he has, you know, a foot in both worlds, so to speak, and that's something that we don't see a lot. You know, I do think a little bit different than him, and that is, you know, we've got to do something to protect folks from these out of control local governments. And just saying, well, get better at elections, you know, we got to do better than that. And there's things and safeguards that we can put in place to prevent the situation in the first place. So,
sure,
that's where we need to start.
All right. You're listening to Montana Talks. We're going to be back after the break.
Hey, you did it.
I did it.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, welcome back to Montana Talks. You've got Jake Eaton and Scott Aspenlighter in this morning for Aaron. Again, I want to thank Commissioner Brodell up in the Flathead for calling in. It was a good conversation on tax reform there. I know there is going to be a multitude of opinions as to how to keep in control some of these counties like Gallatin County and Missoula County and spending there versus some of the more conservative counties across the state. It's going to be a difficult conversation, but we'll have a lot of time over the next 4 months to have that conversation. Now, we want to get back to talking about our crazy Montana Supreme Court. And there isn't a better expert in the state of Montana about the nonsensical Montana Supreme Court than Mr. Jake Eaton, my co-host.
Well, so the Supreme Court is nuts. Our Supreme Court is just crazy. But it's not just the Supreme Court, right? Like, that's what we've done. Like, we have some awful, awful district court judges, too. And if you go back and look, a big part of the reason that is we've had 16 years worth of Democrat governors appointing people to these vacant district court judges. And there's like 48, 50, something like that, district court judges across the state. The plurality of those got there today by being appointed by a Democrat governor.
And the trick, right, is that once you're in, you're in, and you're asking the voters to throw you out, essentially. You're not running against anybody,
right? You know very seldom are these contested elections. You have a retained election that, you know, most people don't vote in. There's huge undervotes, right? You know, and you look in Yellowstone County, for example, there was 5 incumbent district court judges that were on the ballot in 2024. Not one of them had an opponent,
right?
Which is great. I mean, some of them were really good judges, some of them pretty awful judges, but we wish we had a point. There was one contested district court race in the state in 2024.
In the entire state of Montana.
And it was in Butte, of all places. And it was for a vacancy. So the craziness of our judicial system is not just relegated to the Supreme Court, but it's to the district court. So I'll give you a perfect example. So a guy named Mike Minahan, who's a district court judge in Helena, he's a former Democrat legislator, right? But our judiciary is not partisan, so he's not a Democrat anymore. So just because he was a Democrat legislator until the day before he got sworn in as a judge doesn't mean he's a Democrat.
Right.
We got to remember that.
He's nonpartisan.
He's totally nonpartisan. So he's also the chairman of the Judicial Standards Committee, which is the regulatory body governs, you know, ethics complaints and things like that against any judge. So I filed a complaint against Jeremiah Lynch, who was running for Supreme Court in 2023. I filed a complaint that alleging that he had violated the Code of Judicial Conduct for judicial candidates. The Judicial Standards Commission that Mike Minahan heads up dismissed my complaint. I said, okay, fine. I want to see all the records that you generated in what I'm sure was a very thorough investigation of the allegations of this complaint. And he said no. Refused to hand them over.
Wait a second. Right. You don't get to see the information that proved that what you were claiming was incorrect.
That's right. He said, no, you can't have them. All of this is confidential. And I said, well, your problem is your own rules. The Judicial Standards Commission say all this stuff is confidential while it's pending. And then if it's dismissed or if it's forwarded to the Montana Supreme Court for disciplinary action, those things are no longer confidential.
Right.
He fought me. So I said, you know, I'm not just going to sit here and take this. So I sued him. And I'm doing it pro se. I'm my own lawyer. We went through every district court judge in Yellowstone County. They all recused themselves or we recused them.
Right.
And it ended up with Judge Nick Mernion in Forsyth, since who has the case.
Okay.
So just on Thursday, I was had a hearing. It was over in the Rosebud County Courthouse in this case against Judge Minahan, who was represented by a guy named Stuart Segrest, who just happens to be the former immediate past president of the Montana Bar Association. Right. That's how this little incestuous circle works here. He didn't show up. He didn't drive down to Forsyth, right? He shows up on Zoom. Minahan didn't show up for the hearing, right? He couldn't even be bothered, you know, to Zoom in. But I think this case is just symptomatic of what's wrong with our entire judicial system in Montana. And that's it. These guys want to live by one set of rules that governs themselves and set another set of rules for everybody else to follow. And it's just really getting to the point where there's not a lot of other options that we have in Montana, except for some pretty extreme things. I think most people would say, you know, partisan judicial elections ought to be a pretty extreme option that we have and that we shouldn't just go to. Now, there's about 30 other states that have some form of partisan judicial elections and hasn't broken the rule of law or anything like that. So, you know, kind of some of these extremist arguments against it are just kind of nonsensical. But that's what we have here. We, you know, we we have the same judge who ruled that the Shoto Akantia newspaper ought to be able to sit in on the deliberations of the governor's judicial nominations commission when they're evaluating which judges to recommend for to him to appoint. That's open to the public, but his records about why he dismissed a complaint against a Democrat judicial candidate, that doesn't have to be open to the public.
Right. And I think that's the other thing that's crazy about the whole process, right? And take it across the board in the judicial system. So often these judges go unchallenged because people either don't have the resources, they don't have the know-how, they don't have the ability to challenge and to take it on and push back and fight for themselves or fight for what's right. I think that's a large part how this has gotten to where it's gotten to, because people have just taken what has happened and moved on and said, well, what am I going to do? The Montana Supreme Court's going to throw it out anyway, so why am I going to keep banging my head against the wall?
That's right.
Except for Jake is a bona fide door kicker and glass breaker. And so, you know, I appreciate the fight that you continue to put forward with the Montana judiciary as a whole, because at some point somebody has got to keep fighting these people and fighting for some clarity and some vision into the things that they're doing and making, you know, bringing sunlight into the process. Sunlight
and bringing a little common sense back to the process. We, you know, for the entirety of our country, we've said kids can't enter into contracts of any kind.
Right.
Right. We have an age of majority in this country. The Montana Supreme Court just threw that out. And they threw it out not because they no longer believe that's a reasonable principle. They threw that out because they're trying to achieve their political ends of, you know, moving this transgender ideology forward. And this is too often what our courts in Montana do, is in an effort to achieve their desired political outcomes, they create a bunch of really terrible case law that has wide-ranging right. impacts on all kinds of things, right? And, you know, I mean, right now we have one of the most pro-criminal majorities on the Supreme Court. I mean, Lori McKinnon and Ingrid Gustafson have never met a criminal they don't want to let out of jail.
Right.
Like, I think if it was up to the two of those women, they would overturn every criminal sentence that comes before the Montana Supreme Court. It's really quite remarkable. And those things have consequences. You know, when you overturn longstanding precedent on what police officers can and can't use as reasonable suspicion to conduct searches and pull people over, that has a huge impact.
Right. And it resonates in every community across our state. From a policy level and from a incorporation of the rules and following the rules for our safety officers.
Right. And then, that flows up into the county attorneys, and they don't know if they're going to be able to prosecute these cases now. And is, you know, am I going to be able to rely on this standard in order to prosecute this case? Or do I just need to cut a deal? Because, you know, who knows what
the judge's going to do.
What the judges are going to do up there. So, I mean, it's something that has a huge impact that's well beyond just, I mean, we hear about kind of this handful of political cases, you know, about abortion stuff, about the health case and environmental things and the transgender. Like, you know, a couple of those types of hot-button political issues get all of the attention. Meanwhile, you know, they're just overturning their own precedent on a regular basis. You know, they do it multiple times a year, which is pretty remarkable because there hasn't been that much turnover in the court.
Right.
So sometimes it's like it's the same majority, you know, same, you know, 5-6 person majority voting to overturn a precedent that they set a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Because now the facts of the case are different. Now they're trying to achieve a different political outcome. And we've got no stability in the rule of law here.
Yeah. It's bananas to me the number of times that the Montana Supreme Court has also been overturned federally.
Right. By the U.S.
Supreme Court. By the U.S. Supreme Court.
I think it's the most of any top state court in the country.
Right. Just think about that. Overturned more times than any other Supreme Court in the United States. With that, we're going to take another quick break and come back. We've got Rabbi Brooke coming in here on the back half of the show. Montana Talks.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordlund.
In February of 2023, the Mexican government put out two decrees that dealt with corn imports from the U.S., Dave Salmison with the American Farm Bureau says both decrees were found to be in violation of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement.
Both said that they did not want genetically modified corn from the U.S. One was about white corn that you use to make food products such as tortillas and such. And the other was about the yellow corn that goes into livestock feed. So the one about the white corn said, no, we're not importing that anymore. Don't want. And the other one said, we want the Mexican government to find other sources. We want non-GMO yellow corn.
The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative brought the case before the USMCA dispute panel that made its decision late last week.
The dispute panel, which is made up of persons from all three countries, decided for the U.S. on all counts. The main points of their panel decision were, one, that the Mexican measures were not based on science, and two, that what they were doing was undermining the market access that Mexico agreed to provide in the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement.
Mexico is the top foreign buyer of U.S. corn. In 2023 alone, the U.S. exported $5.39 billion worth of corn to Mexico. I'm Lane Northline.
Taking your calls live, 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, welcome back, Montana. You've got Jake Eaton and Scott Aspenletter in for the great Aaron Flint today. So we have covered a lot of ground, a fair amount of ground this morning, and we are just we should be having the rabbi come on here later this morning, but he's running a little bit late to the show. So we're going to keep talking a little bit about judicial reform. And Jake, so we've talked about a lot of the problems. What are some of the things that are going to be coming forward in this legislative session to start to address that, or at least start to chip away at the forever immunity that these judges have to act without impunity?
Well, I think the legislature's done a good job. They brought forward, I think so far, that judicial oversight committee that they had over the interim has brought about 15 proposals forward so far, and it kind of runs the gamut. Some of them are, you know, the partisan judicial elections, which I'm all in favor of. But some of them are just a little bit more administrative, too, to say, okay, you know, how much are these judges really working? You know, what do these caseloads look like? How are we measuring this? And, you know, which judges are producing and which judges aren't? And, you know, how do we create a mechanism so people know that, right? And if, you know, Yellowstone County is a great example. We got 5 judges that were just on the ballot. Well, 3 of them are really good judges. 2 of them are terrible. And I'm not just ideologically terrible, but just like bad in that they don't do much work. And, you know, sure, if you can go down there to the courthouse and you know, ever run into Judge Collette Davies actually in the courthouse, aside from a day when she has a hearing, then you should go buy your billion-dollar mega millions ticket, because they just don't work. And that's the case with judges all across the state. And it's the case with, you know, some of our Supreme Court judges. I mean, Judge Lori McKinnon spends most of her time in North Carolina, where her husband lives, not in Helena. Ingrid Gustafson spends her time in Billings, not in Helena.
Yeah.
Dirk Sandifer, who's on his way out, spends his time in his place in Sealy Lake, not in Helena.
Set-free Sandifer.
Right. I mean, you know, so some of these kind of accountability mechanisms and things like this, so that people know, you know, what these judges are doing, not just from an ideological standpoint, but, right, you know, are they, whether you agree with them, a district court judge ideology or not, like, you can look at the data and say, okay, this judge is doing a good job of moving cases forward, of making sure that things that are getting through the system, and not just adding to the backlog and making people wait around, you know, for months and years,
right,
to get resolution of their case, whether that be, you know, a divorce case or a business dispute,
right,
or, you know, family law matter. Quick resolution is the best result for everybody,
right,
no matter what. If you win or lose the case,
yeah,
quick resolution is step one.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, in Yellowstone County here, we're preparing ourselves to get 3 more judges.
And that seems silly. I mean, this legislature is not going to approve more judges.
Yeah, I
seems unlikely.
It's a real conversation that the county commissioners are getting prepared to add 3 more courtrooms for 3 more judges in district court judges in Yellowstone County. And, you know, I think that's the hard part about having a real conversation about whether that's needed or not, is you can't see. I mean, you can feel that the caseload or that the progress moving through the court system in Yellowstone County is incredibly slow. But nobody can tell whether that's based on caseload, whether that's based on hours worked, whether that, you know,
their complications of the case, the difficulty. Like nobody has any ability to know that. So how do we even have a conversation about whether that's real or not?
Yeah, and I think some of these measures that the legislature's taken is the first step in setting those benchmarks. Because right now the only thing that we have is the court administrator who works for the Supreme Court goes around and basically says all the judges, like, hey, do you feel like you're overworked? Like, do you need more help? Do we need more judges? To which, of course, they come back and they all say, well, yes, of course, we need more. You know, we need more judges, and I need two more clerks, and I need a second judicial assistant. And,
right.
And all of those things. So some of these, you know, mechanisms that they're bringing in, and then some of the things that the speaker mentioned, you know, getting into the audits of, you know, some of these particular budgets and some of these particular groups that are governed or controlled by the Supreme Court, whether that be, you know, the Office of Disciplinary Counsel and the Bar Association on the lawyer side, or the Judicial Standards Commission on the judge side, and taking a good hard look at how these organizations are run and what it is they're doing, I think will be a really positive step.
Yeah, yeah. Things have got to change, and at some point in time, we as the citizens of Montana got to start putting our foot down and supporting the legislature, frankly, as they try to hold the courts accountable for their own actions. You know, we have seen time and time and time again, the courts give themselves or people in their circle a free pass. And we have got to bring some accountability and some sunlight to what goes on in our court systems here in Montana. From a local perspective, you know, the district court operations here in Yellowstone County are certainly playing a role in the problem that we have at the jail and the capacity issues that we have at the jail. The speed at which those cases move through the system is at a snail's pace currently. You know, I think the local commission that was set up by our county attorney, Scott Toito, is starting to pull some levers to speed that up. But the reality is it goes as fast as the courts process the cases.
Right.
To some extent. And we can't get people in our detention center into the state facility because we don't have trials and we're not getting convictions, you know? And so we are in purgatory here in Yellowstone County with people sitting in jail for years on trial.
Well, and this is a problem that exists not just in Yellowstone County, right? This is not a problem that is exclusive to Yellowstone County. This happens in every urban county in the state,
right?
That we're seeing this. We're seeing slower throughput times, essentially, and we're seeing people in county facilities longer because of that. That creates a backlog. That means what happens is that raises the bar for who gets input into that county facility, right? And so now in Yellowstone County, if you didn't commit a violent felony and you get arrested for any crime, a property crime, the odds that you're going to spend any time in jail short of a DUI or a violent felony is very thin. Like it's probably not going to happen. You're probably going to be taken down there and immediately released.
Right. And that's what's happening here in Billings. I mean, we have taken away the threat of jail from our officers. And as such, you know, we see property crime like crazy. Like my wife was in Sierra Trading Post. I think it was Friday last week. At 8 o'clock in the morning, right? Like right when the store opens up, got in there to get a few things, beat the rush. And she said, you know, I was standing there and there was three people walking. And they, like she said, I don't know if they were, I was trying to figure out if they were just going to use the bathroom or what. Three people walk in. They walk out with the three biggest boxes in the store. I don't know if they were grills or coolers or whatever. Picked them up, walked right out, not run out the door. And then loaded up in the trunk of their car in the parking lot. With no hesitation, like looked at the counter guy. The counter guy goes, you know, motions with his hands in the air to my wife.
Yeah.
And so she said, why aren't you going to call the cops? And she said, well, I can't do anything. We're not supposed to do anything with this. So you know, property crime right there. I mean, the store got robbed right in the middle of the day and nothing happens. And these folks all know it too, right? Yeah. Exactly what you're saying. They know that even if they do get arrested, they're going to get taken down to the jail. They're going to get booked in and pumped right back out within 60 minutes because there literally is no room at the inn right now.
Yeah, and then they're not going to get a court date for 6 months.
Right. And they're going to get kicked back out without having seen the judge to put them on GPS monitoring, without putting them on a bond. They're going to get a notice to appear. Most of the time, they don't. And that just backs our system back up even more. So, you know, these are compounding issues that we're facing in judicial reform, and the impact that they have on our communities, I think, is pretty widespread. But great conversation. We're going to take another break here. You're listening to Montana Talks.
Yo. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Welcome back for the last segment here. You've got Jake Eaton and Scott Aspenlighter sitting in for the great Aaron Flint. Jake, as we're kind of talking about judicial stuff and things like that, maybe we should talk about the shining star that we have here in Montana in our Attorney General, our friend Austin Knudsen, who stood us up, was going to call in, but is out elk hunting this morning trying to take advantage of the shoulder season and fill his freezer for his family. But maybe we should talk about our friend Austin Knudsen and the work that our Montana Attorney General is doing here for the people of Montana.
Well, it really is remarkable when you look at what he has been able to do. So, I mean, Montana does not, the DOJ does not have a big staff.
No.
I mean, relatively, if you look at it, if you include, you know, the lawyers that do like the criminal appeals, because all the criminal appeals are handled by the state, and lawyers that do like the state government agency stuff, you know, all in, it's about 20 something lawyers is all.
Right.
You know,
there's counties that have more.
Yeah, I think honestly. Scott Twito and Nelson County and I think Flathead County both have as many or more attorneys than the Attorney General's office does. And what they've been able to do with that team, I mean, they were a part of or led almost 60 lawsuits against the Biden administration and really took Montana from, you know, kind of a backbench, like, oh yeah, maybe we'll sign on to this multi-state brief, to leading on so many of these issues, whether it's, you know, the border or energy development or Second Amendment or just, you know, kind of the general overreach of federal government, which most of the time the Biden administration manifests itself through energy regulations and things like this. But even, you know, some like the crazy student loan forgiveness stuff that the Biden administration was trying to do. Montana was a leader on a lot of these issues for the first time ever. And that's been recognized, you know, across the country, especially in, you know, the attorneys general world. They made him the vice chair of the Republican Attorneys General Association. He's set to become the chairman of that organization, I think, in the next election cycle. And it's really encouraging to see, you know, not just for Montana, but with the impact that you can have for the country when you've got somebody in office that's not afraid to stand up for what they believe in.
Yeah.
And it's willing really is that simple.
Yeah.
If you're willing to stand up for what you believe in and get in the fight, you know, regardless of the consequences, you can get a lot accomplished. And there have been some consequences, right? I mean, he's still dealing with this nonsense, ethics complaint that was filed by not even anybody from Montana, right? But filed by a California lawyer.
Right.
With because he said mean things
about the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court.
Yeah.
He was protecting the legislature, which is his job.
As he was defending.
And it wasn't like he was out like at some rally, you know, saying inappropriate comments about the Supreme Court. They're saying his arguments in legal briefs filed before the Supreme Court or somehow violations of the code of conduct. What's interesting, though, is they tried to the Democrat special counsel and his supporters tried to ignore the whole time throughout this process that the Supreme Court actually has in their ethical obligations an obligation to report lawyer misconduct. And they did not report Attorney General Knudsen or anybody on his team for any of these things that they're now
California.
The Democrat special counsel and the California attorney are trying to say are violations of the code of conduct. So it's really pretty silly. I think ultimately the Supreme Court is going to dismiss this. The ODC's handpicked hearing panel made up of Democrat donors and activists, you know, recommended suspending them. I doubt that will ever come to fruition. It's something that's silly enough that even
bonkers.
The Montana Supreme Court will likely view as absurd.
And this is one of those things, I mean, as you said, there are consequences when you put your when you draw a line in the sand and you stand up and fight, and you get it from all angles. And what the Attorney General has done over the first 4 years of holding the office has been pretty remarkable. I'm excited to see what the next four holds. Fortunately, he's not going to have to spend as much time fighting the federal government theoretically as he did in his first four.
Well, and I was just talking to him the other day, and his solicitor general is a very talented guy, Christian Corrigan. And so Gavin Newsom in California called the California legislature into a special session and asked for a $25 million legal fund to fight the Trump administration. And so what we're working on in Montana is a legal defense fund to stand with President Trump and fight some of these crazy California lawsuits. So I look forward to hearing some of that later on.
Well, maybe we can get him out of the mountains and onto the radio here one of these days to talk about it himself. Yeah, good luck. Well, folks, it has been a great morning. Appreciate the opportunity to spend it with you. This is Montana Talks.
You got it right. Last one.
Last one.
You got it right.